Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, the Bills running away now!
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown! The first play from scrimmage!
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
That's how you know he's committed. He's ready. Jeremy and Joe, Victory Monday on WGR.
Here's the snap. Back to pass, looking left, now right, has time. Looking open down the field, complete to Coleman at the 34, 25, 20, 15, and is wrestled to the ground at the 11-yard line. Big pass play to the rookie who was wide open. Allen back to pass, has time, looks underneath, complete to Ty Johnson for a 4-yard touchdown reception. Josh Allen went to the check down and Johnson rewarded him.
Chris Brown on the call, one of the highlights of the game, brought to you by Northland Workforce Training Center. Train for what's next. Let's get into some Skyworks stats of the game, brought to you by Skyworks Equipment Rental, building America from the ground up. Tony Pollard, 16 for 61. No Tajay Spears in this game for the Titans. And a team that leans into its run game, 16 for 61. So the Bills' run defense took care of business. Mason Rudolph, 25 of 40 for 215, was sacked three times, had an interception. There was a fumbled snap as well. So the Bills did the job. Josh Allen, 21 of 33, 323, two touchdowns. And 21 of 33, do the math there. That's 17 of 22 in the second half. Things got going a lot better. James Cook, 12 for 32.
Yep.
Consider the run established.
Yes, he got a touchdown.
He did.
Best run of the game.
So that's the funny part. Ready for this?
Yeah.
He had an 11-yard run. The other 11 carries, 11 for 21 for James Cook.
Okay.
Seems like a play you should maybe do a little less against the Tennessee team anyway. Then there's Keon Coleman, 125 on seven targets. Amari Cooper, 66 yards. Khalil Shakir, 65 yards. Kincaid, 52 on three targets. And the Bills had four receivers with a 20-yard reception or longer. Shakir, 20. Kincaid, 25. Cooper, 27. Coleman, 57. Coleman is, I'm starting to get excited. Not only because of what he's shown he can do, but now that insulation of Cooper over top of him to take more attention. Like, I think Coleman, I don't know what the number I want to put as like for his ceiling, but he's going to have a really strong, he's going to have a bigger role, I think, and he's having a strong rookie season.
I'm now looking at him as, given that Cooper is here, like the need of the separator, the X receiver, the number one on the outside is here, that I can now think of Coleman more as this is the Gabe Davis replacement. and he does more than Gabe Davis does.
Yeah.
And like, maybe Davis is a better blocker. Maybe Davis makes fewer mistakes on a play-to-play basis, but Coleman is a more dangerous player than Gabe Davis is.
And would you say,
I think,
of all the rookie receivers right now, I'm not going to tell you he's the best or going to win Rookie of the Year, no way. Like, Malik Nabers is a freak show. Brian Thomas Jr. is doing really well. But if you were just to evaluate it on rookie situations, doesn't he have one of the most favorable rookie situations right now? Well, let's go back to the rookie class. Mm-hmm. Worthy got drafted by Andy Reid, and it's Hollywood Brown and Travis Kelce and Mahomes, and there's a lot there. And now Brown's hurt. And like they don't have the pieces that Rashee Rice got hurt. Right. Worthy was supposed to be insulated by three other targets. That's all gone now. That's dried up for him. So he, like, in terms of rookie situation, I think Coleman's in a really good spot to thrive, and he started to really look good. So good for him. Very exciting.
One other stat for you, by the way. Josh Allen yesterday became the third, pretty specific stat, but Allen is the third quarterback in NFL history through seven games of a season to have 10 or more passing touchdowns and no interceptions.
No picks.
10 touchdowns. No, wait, it's more than that now. I forgot what the number is, but he's zero picks. And the only two others are like Alex Smith and Milt Plum from the 60s. That's it. Zero picks. If he goes zero picks, he's going to win MVP.
Milt Plum.
Milt Plum.
I got to get
a Milt Plum reference on the show.
I got to get a Milt Plum jersey. Meanwhile,
Mahomes leads the league in interceptions now with eight.
And they're undefeated.
Let's see everybody put their mind around turnovers now that the Chiefs are 6-0. Yep. I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm not even mad that he has eight picks. I like that Mahomes has eight picks and that they're undefeated, because now everyone in the national media is going to be faced with the reality of, oh, wait, maybe turnovers don't matter as much as we thought they did?
Yep.
Because Mahomes has eight and they're still undefeated?
803-0550 to South Florida. Larry, good morning, Larry. Happy Victory Monday.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Always a pleasure to chat with you. So the second half, wow. First half, wow. So think about this. You guys were talking stats. I love stats, so I'm happy you did that. Four of the five scoring drives started with a pass, not a run. First half, first three series are 3-and-out, but the first two series, run, run, pass, run, run, pass. We attempt 11 passing attempts in the first half, little or no motion, and it looked like just, you know, Josh was hoping for a prayer that one of those passes will be caught. Second half, 22 attempts. So he doubled his amount in the first half. And holy moly, what a difference in the half. Every time we do this, and remember, was it that win game that we lost to New England? McDermott was so damn conservative. They just run, 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 run. We can't throw in this. Well, you got the strongest arm in the league. When he finally let him throw, that's when we came back and almost won that game, which we probably should have won that game. So how much statistics is it going to take for McDermott to realize the strength of our offense is when the run supports the pass, not the pass supports the run? It took him a whole half to finally let Joe Brady call the type of game he wanted to call. Maybe that was Joe Brady's fault in the first half, but I got to think, Brady having Burrow for all those years in college and then having Allen now and having the experience that guy has at his young age is a lot smarter than what he produced in the first half. So this team, now that we have Cooper, has a downfield threat. It was so wonderful to see us throw downfield finally. And that touchdown pass to Cooper right over the middle, I almost jumped out of my bar stool because I was so excited. We went over the middle. Right halfway down the line there. It was a beautiful thing to see. And that's what we need to do to start really competing. Because if we have another first half like that, with the exception of maybe the Jets and the Patriots, we don't beat another team in the NFL. So thanks for taking my call, fellas.
Thanks, Larry. Cooper, I mean, it went about as well as you could hope for, outside of the drop to open things up. Look good.
Running the type of routes you would think he would, doing the types of things
finding
he would.
Spots in zones. I saw,
yeah,
you know, all the stats. If everybody loves stats, he averaged this is a weird one. He had the highest average speed he'd had in a game.
Yeah,
which average speed is how fast you're running at all times, not just top speed. So I don't know if that means that they put him in more of a position to get moving.
Yeah,
vertically.
Vertically.
Yeah, than the Browns had in the last couple of years, but it was his fastest average speed since 2020.
Mm-hmm. So maybe if that's the game he has when he doesn't know the full playbook, it looks like he's going to be really important.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like the results he has on the rest of the offense, if that is only him knowing part of it, then that trade is going to go really well for them, I think.
803-0550. Yeah, the top end of what the Cooper trade looks like, oh, it's starting to percolate for me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's always been like, this is a good idea. He opens things up. What if he's unbelievably good? And it's what if it's a better fit than anyone could have imagined? That's kind of what Diggs was. I mean, when they traded for Diggs, it was, hey, this guy's pretty good. I wonder what the fit will be like. And then, 1,500 yards.
Right.
Oh, look, turns out it works great.
Yeah.
And that's always going to be where I land with Allen. You know, for a little bit there, we got into, well, he'll make players that aren't that good, he'll make them better. Okay. Take players that are already good and see what you get when you pair them with Josh Allen. And that's what we're seeing with Cooper in one game. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. It was a beautiful day. Beautiful day there in Orchard Park.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. Maybe a little warm. But it was
Come
fine.
On.
It was fine.
It was warmer than week one.
It was.
By like a couple degrees, I think.
It was. I never had to take off the quarter zip, though. I was able to kind of just...
Well, that's perfect then, right?
Well...
Unless it's right on the edge and then...
It was right on the edge and I didn't think it was worth taking off. I kept it on. It's a light quarter zip.
Today and tomorrow, I think you're taking the quarter zip off. Tomorrow's like 72.
Rob in Connecticut. Hey, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Joe. Good morning, Jeremy. Hey, I got a good one for you, Jeremy. We got to start off the day like this. What do you get when you cross an owl and a goat?
I don't know.
A hoot nanny, because that was a real hoot nanny of a game yesterday, my friend.
It was a fun one. 34-10.
Yes, it was. Anyway, listen. You know, yesterday I was talking to you, and my curiosity was satisfied. One of the things that I brought up was the wide receivers. I wanted to see what Joe Brady was going to do with moving the pieces around. And Amari Cooper is definitely a distraction for the other defenses, which is going to help us down the road. And the other thing I want to say is I get frustrated with some of the fans that call up and just come down on DeMar Hamlin so much. I mean, he's leading the team in interceptions now. He plays very well. So I think he should stay on the field for a while. Lay off DeMar Hamlin. I think he's doing a great job. With that, guys, I'm just going to listen to you guys. You're going to break down the game.
Yeah.
And thanks.
Thanks, Rob. Have a good Monday. Hamlin, another pick for him. You know, this one, both of them have kind of fallen to him a little bit.
He just doesn't really make mental mistakes. Like, I don't think, you watch him run with the football, he's not a very good athlete. Like, but by state safety standards, like, he's not a great athlete to me. And maybe that's why he was a sixth-round pick. But I don't know that dude has ever makes mental mistakes. Like, he wasn't the culprit of the big Nico Collins play of the season, right? Like, when him and Rapp are in there, they're maybe not making the big game-changing plays that Hyde and Poyer were, but the one thing Rapp and Hamlin are not doing to me when they are both on the field together is they are not allowing big plays over the top of them.
803-0550, Victory Monday. I am the quarterback when we return, and more of your phone calls as well. Sal, top of the hour, 7 o'clock, to break it down from the sidelines. A perfect day in Orchard Park. Not so great first half, but whatever. Other than that, perfect day, 34 unanswered points. Victory Monday, Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims.
Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Lamar Jackson's had a perfect passer rating and has been lighting up the scoreboard. Here's Henry, left side. Yep, it can change in a play. There he goes. McCollum, the only man that can catch him, and he does.
Derrick Henry, long runs. Another over 100-yard rushing game, too.
I really thought he was going to score a touchdown.
He's on pace for over 2,000 yards rushing this year. He is. I said it real quick there, right at the end of one of our segments. He's an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
In an age where running backs have been depreciated. I mean, they have. I mean, they had a very good summer in terms of getting paid, but many teams have now gone to the quarterback passing, what have you. He's a guy, 873 yards already. He had 169 last night. It's just, he's unbelievable. His only, honestly, bad game this year, week one against Kansas City. 13 rushing attempts, 46 yards. Good for 3.5 yards on average. Every other game, he's been above 4.5 yards per rush. Just unbelievable. Obviously against Buffalo, 8.3. Last night against Tampa, 11.3. He only had 15 rushing attempts. He's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. He would be a guy, honestly, though. Adrian Peterson at the time was also somebody. I would love for them to break the rushing record in the season. Like, there are certain running backs I'd love to see do it. Like, yeah. Chris Johnson from years ago with the Titans, flash in the pan. Yes, he ran for 2,000 yards, but it was a very small career that he did it. I would love to see Derrick Henry do it, or like an Adrian Peterson do it. Derrick Henry, I would just love to see him do it, just mainly because it would be a little bit of a spite to like the Titans, where it's like he spent his entire career here, built a Hall of Fame resume here. First year in Baltimore, breaks the rushing record. I think that'd be a lot of fun. I would like to see how Titans fans react to that. And then for Ravens fans, I think that'd be their second 2,000-yard rusher because Jamal Lewis as well.
It'd also be a little funny if he does all that and then they lose in the first round of the playoffs.
I mean, look, until they, until they
not to be that guy, but hey,
put up good years. Yeah, Jamal Lewis, 2003 with Baltimore, just over 2,000 yards. Yeah, that'd be really cool. I actually would really like that for Baltimore to have 2,000-yard rushers. Let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We are going to go to Tim here. Tim, how are we doing this morning?
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
I'm going to be a little bit more of a tune of positivity this morning. You know, I've got the day off. I checked my phone this morning. Jets fans are begging for Rex Ryan to come out of retirement. Miami fans are doing mental gymnastics on how their team's going to go on a playoff run. Bills are 5-2. It's just everything's great. But what I wanted to talk about first, I want to give Brandon Bean his flowers for two reasons. One, I think it's crazy that people call in and kind of hate him, honestly. But for him to go and make that move, I know that there was rumors about Amari Cooper being traded or that it was kind of wrapped up, or at least they touched base before the game. But I thought my fear was that the Bills were going to beat the Jets and not go after a problem that they had. So I really want to condemn Brandon Bean for doing that. identifying a problem and doing it because, you know, just, I mean, we saw it. It kicks Keon Coleman against a number two corner. It's just going to drop people down the totem pole, and I just love everything about it. But also, I want to just touch on the draft class that he put together. I mean, Keon Coleman, first off, you get Kansas City to give you the third-round pick, and you supposedly get the guy you want. You know, is that the case? I honestly don't know. Nobody will ever know. But they get Keon Coleman, who's coming into his own. You get Dwayne Carter, who I'm becoming a huge fan of. I mean, he gives you all the penetration factor that Ed Oliver gives you, but then he can also hold up in the run game. Like, isn't that all that we've ever wanted out of Ed Oliver anyways? I really like what he's coming into. Cole Bishop, second-round pick. He's going to take some time to develop. He had a bonehead play in the Texans game, but I don't know if you guys saw the kick return hit that he had against the Titans. That was pretty cool to watch. But I'm hoping he's going to start at the end of the season. Who knows? And then lastly, oh, by the way, Ray Davis in the fourth round, too. It's just a really solid draft class. You're not going to hit them all. I can't say enough good things about Brandon Bean, him making the move in the draft class. And then lastly, I want to start off with positivity first, but then I want to ask you guys a question. You know, I don't know a ton about Seattle because you don't see them a ton, like you guys mentioned earlier at the top of the hour. But from what I understand about them, they're very, very strong on the outside of their defense. But to my knowledge, they have Dodson and Baker at linebacker, and I just think that that's a matchup nightmare for them in favor of the Bills. I think that we're going to work a lot of the middle of the field this game, passing-wise. If they end up going to man, I could see Cook having a big game in the pass game. I want to know what your guys' thoughts are on it, and do you see it the same way? Do you think we're going to kind of attack them like that? And I'd just love to hear your thoughts. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for the call, man.
I didn't realize Tyrell Dodson was there.
Yeah.
That's fun.
But Seattle's a weird team. Like, they are in front of the NFC West. I don't think they've looked all that impressive up to this year, really, outside of Sunday, I guess. Sunday, week one.
Yeah.
They went on a three-game losing streak. Detroit blew them out. New York Giants beat them, which you can argue kind of was like one of those like fluke games. The Bills have them every year. Most teams have them every year where it's just a game where you look back and go, how? Why? No, that didn't happen. Like, it's one of those games. And then San Francisco beat the hell out of them as well. They bounced back against Atlanta. I think that is kind of going to be how you should attack them, Tim. Honestly, I loved, though, to see the Bills actually start to use Dalton Kincaid this past weekend down the field, because I think that's how you need to start using them. But yeah, if you're able to attack the middle of the field with them, with Shakir and Kincaid, I think the Bills passing attack should be able to do it. They have good corners from what I do somewhat know about them, but this is a team that, yeah, they're in the NFC, and not only that, they're in a division you very rarely ever see because the games are on either later or what have you. You know, we're in the middle of the Bills game as we do it. We don't really get them on TV here. So, like, they're going to be a team that I'm going to look up, like, Locked On Seahawks just to kind of see, like, what they're about. Because up to this point, I really don't know outside of I see a Geno Smith highlight, like, once a week, and it just makes my jaw hit the floor. Or DK Metcalf, where he actually hurts himself, makes an unbelievable catch.
Right.
That's kind of what I know about them. It's just spot highlights here and there.
I think it's also interesting that, like, the Bills started to use Kincaid over the middle deeper down the field as they're coming into a week where they're going to play an opponent that's kind of weak over the middle down the field. I mean, you could really exploit those two linebackers. I mean, Tyrell Dodson was great here for the Bills when he needed to be, but he was never the starter. He was the starter because people got hurt. And he's the starter in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because people are hurt. It's because he's the starter.
Yeah.
And there's no other options, which it's not really a detriment to him. But, I mean, I don't know, like, if he's that good of a linebacker, and we'll see that against the Bills here, I think. But, you know, if they can attack
if that's really what their linebacking core is, I think the Bills should be able to do work in the middle of the field and really kind of live there the entire game. And then on the rookie class as well, I'm so glad. Like, it's becoming now just like a known thing to give Dwayne Carter's flowers. He's been awesome.
Really good.
He has been fantastic. He's getting a play basically every game where you're like, okay, That worthy trade is really working. Like, I'm really liking what we're doing here. He has been a lot of fun. I think what has helped that, though, too, is not just Carter popping off. You're also getting better games from Coleman. I think he's had 3-plus catches in every game. Of course, his first 100-yard game last week or this past Sunday should have had another touchdown. At the time, I was like, I don't know if this is going to count, what have you. I felt good about that than not. I think you should have had a touchdown. And that would have been, what, I think six catches for him, over 100 yards. You're seeing now it's every few weeks he's breaking away because of his physicality. He doesn't have the burner speed. I thought he was separating more because we did that separation win stat or what have you, and that really wasn't that at all. He's not perfect, but he's working really well for the Bills, and now you're seeing Cooper, the last caller brought it up perfectly too. Keon now isn't going to be the only outside wide receiver. You know, they have to respect Cooper, and you're going to get Coleman, yeah, more on like number two corners, and then you get Khalil Shakir healthy now as well. You have to zero in on him. He has proven just how good he is. It's starting to look like the Bills offense is forming into shape, at least a little bit. I just need a few more weeks of full performances, of seeing the passing game look like it did in the second half on Sunday. I'm not asking for 300 yards every game, but just more consistency where, yeah, like I'm seeing Allen be as efficient as he was earlier in the year with Khalil Shakir. Now you add, of course, Amari Cooper into that as well. It felt like they were finding it. It really, really did. I just need to see it for a whole game. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Ben on the line. Ben, how are we doing today?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling.
Just a couple of points real quick. I guess the first thing I want to say is that I love the iceberg analogy. I get it. I think that's how a lot of us kind of feel. Mm-hmm. It's just this hesitant optimism. And the second thing I wanted to talk about was the two losses in and of themselves. I'm less concerned about the Ravens loss because we're, as a defense, I don't think we're really set up to play those power run teams like that. We're set up to play 90% of the other NFL teams we play. The last time we got banged up that bad was Derrick Henry a few years ago against the Titans. So to me, that Houston game is a little more concerning because it felt like there were some real strategic errors by the coaching staff, mm-hmm. especially at the end of the game. And I understand Josh Allen had a bad performance, didn't do well out of the gate. But at the end of the game, the play calling, the clock management, some of the things the coaching staff did, that's the kind of stuff when we get to the end of the year and we get into the playoffs, those are the things that might make or break you. Just interested in hearing your guys' thoughts on that. I'll hang up and listen.
I think that's totally right, Ben. I think that's a good point to bring up with, because that's kind of how I felt about the Baltimore game too, which was that, you know, yeah, I think you said it, 90% of the teams in the NFL don't play like that. The other team I can think of was the Colts with Jonathan Taylor, you know. With that being said, though, you may have to play Baltimore again, and that's concerning. I do think, though, they will have a better idea how to handle Lamar. That was really the first game he played well against the Bills in you know, Allen and Lamar's kind of short, I don't want to say rivalry, but short career in playing each other, because they haven't actually played all that much together. In terms of the Houston game, this is where I think Cooper's going to play such a massive factor. You won't have deep shots to Hollins. I think that is a major factor to the play calling. In terms of the end of the game, I'm right there with you. I can't say it's necessarily going to get fixed. I think it still absolutely could be a problem. But in terms of the deep shots to Hollins that we saw, like three of them in that game.
Two of them on the last drive. Or, well, no, just one. But just it felt like...
But think of how different that game is. In the wide open shot to Hollins, mm-hmm. if it's Cooper who's the main read on that play.
Right, where instead of looking over your head, he's looking back like a wide receiver should and catching it over the shoulder.
The elite wide receiver he has been yes. throughout much of his career. Mm-hmm. He tracks that ball. They're up 7-0, and they're kind of off to the races. It's a bit of a different game. Of course, you know, Nico Collins also goes out for that game, what have you. I also will say, though, I don't think Houston's looked all that particularly impressive. A really bad game by them against the Packers that ultimately still kind of came down to the wire, but under 100 yards passing for C.J. Stroud. He hasn't looked awesome this year. You're also seeing Stephon Diggs, sort of the limitations of him. He gets a lot of catches. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a lot of yards, and that's kind of been something for him as well. And then also, more to the cautiously optimistic, I think, feeling that everyone's going to have, and you know, to our last two callers, or two of the last three, it's kind of been that. You know, we're all here in Buffalo or in the surrounding areas. We're all Bills fans, so it's going to be that feeling. I think that's like every fan base that hasn't won a Super Bowl in like the last like 15 years. Like Ravens fans might sit there and go, "We'll be fine." You know, look at 2012 when we went on our run. They also maybe don't because it's been, you know, past 10 years. So maybe it's that window. I could honestly say that I feel like only Chiefs fans could sit here, watch their offensive performances, and go, "We're fine." we'll be okay. Call us in January. Where, yeah, probably Bills fans, Bengals fans, Ravens fans are sitting there going, we're 5-2, 6-1, what have you. And it's like, look at all the negatives, though. Like, because they haven't, in a way, quote unquote, shown you that they can get it done. Even though all these teams regularly keep making the playoffs, they win playoff games, what have you, they haven't gotten to the Super Bowl. They haven't done what the Chiefs have done, which I would argue at this point, the Chiefs dynasty is near perfection. Even when they are hurt. And Josh, they lost another receiver. Juju Smith-Schuster out this week with a hamstring injury. They just seem to find a way, whether it's the refs somewhat helping them or turnovers.
How did you feel about the fake out thing where Patrick Mahomes was like going to run out and then just cut back in? How'd you feel about that? I mean, in one way it looks just like a juke. In another way, it's you're by the sidelines. If you juke towards the sidelines, like that's kind of...
I don't love it, but it's also one of those, you don't have to hit him as hard as humanly possible. You can just wrap him up.
Right.
You don't have to slow down to a snail's pace. You can just wrap him up.
But to be fair, if you're another team, a higher profile team that you might play them in the Super Bowl, I'm not saying you're trying to hurt somebody, but you're trying to hit somebody hard. You're trying to hit one of the best quarterbacks in the league hard because you're going to throw him off his game a little bit, and not necessarily to hurt him, but to just kind of get in his head of like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Who's that guy?
Yeah. So. It's frustrating watching that game wanting San Francisco to win, but then like I'm also sitting here going, I've seen Allen do it. I've also seen Allen like kind of get into, you know, the Juilliard school of acting in terms of some of his hits. So I get it, but it's the nature of the beast. It's who these quarterbacks are, and I don't think the league is going to change to going back to allowing quarterbacks to get absolutely killed on the sidelines. 803-0550, the number to call. Johnny, we'll get to your call after this quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You're listening to WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Kansas City was looking for an inside target and a red zone guy, obviously because of the Rashee Rice injury, but also now because Juju Smith-Schuster went down on Sunday against the San Francisco 49ers. Also, Kansas City was not looking to trade a day one or day two pick in this deal.
Peter Schrager. I can't believe the names we're talking about this year. It's
also that, like, Derrick Henry is breaking records, you know, and that, you know, that was possible. But Barkley, like, you got older running back. Mixon is doing well. And these receivers that we're talking about because of their being traded are all 30 and up. Adams, Cooper, DeAndre Hopkins. Nobody's having big years from that group, but they're being moved. So maybe Cooper Kupp is another one. But then it's also like on that next level, Juju Smith-Schuster became relevant after like his career seemed over in New England. They had nobody, and they still cut him. And then, boom, 130 yards and a touchdown for the Chiefs, day one. Kareem Hunt could have had three on Sunday. Did have two. Out of the league, Chiefs. Yep. And it's not just the Chiefs. Like Sterling Shepard now is. I'm bidding on Sterling Shepard. Did you know he was still playing?
That's a you problem.
That's right. But they lose. Tampa loses Evans and Godwin. They throw the ball constantly. Mayfield is second in the league in fantasy points at the position. Yep. Leads the league in touchdown passes. Yeah. Who's catching everything, right? Yep. So just can't believe what kind of year this is. Like there are a few receivers, at least. There are a few good rookies. A couple very good. But almost all those second day receivers, nobody's doing anything. Coleman a little bit, McConkie a little bit, but look at this board that Jeremy made, right? Whatever happened to Adonai Mitchell? Polk can't catch a pass.
Polk and Baker are buried. Yeah. Wilson's been hurt or healthy scratched or both.
Both.
I don't know what's going on there.
Franklin, little sign of life lately.
Franklin,
but
yeah. Yeah. Brian Thomas Jr.'s name isn't on that board anymore, but he's been really good.
Well, he was first round at least.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. You're looking. Oh, are all those guys? Ladd McConkie was
second.
Second round, too. Yeah,
the Bills could have picked
those
any
guys
of them.
Are all second. Yeah. Okay. Yep. I got you.
They could have picked McConkie.
Maybe that's
I wanted
why
them to.
That's how that board got changed then. That's all the guys that didn't go in the first round, I think, is what's
yeah.
up there.
Okay. Leggett went in the first round.
Yep. Right.
Pearsall went in the first round. Worthy.
Right.
What's that been? A couple of plays.
Yeah. Well, and jet sweep.
He was open.
Super open, and, you know, Mahomes missed him.
That's right. In San Francisco?
That happens. Yeah.
So I feel like that's the kind of one of the stories of the year so far, as we're talking about guys from the past and a lot of these rookies. It is supposed to take time, but like I said about Coleman, and I think you agree, I'm encouraged.
Yeah, me too. I we did talk about this early in the week. Like, he's only on pace, though, for, like, 40 catches. And so, like, I don't want to say, like, that's on track. You know, it's maybe better than some people thought, but I'm not going to go, oh, we got it made if he ends up with 40 catches. What I would hope for is that now that he's sort of, he had a breakout game and went over 100 yards like he did on Sunday, and now with Cooper here, like if they get around to throwing it more, I'm just hoping like Coleman, this has all been sort of the pregame for him, you know, just sort of because that happened with. I'm not saying he's going to end up like Rashee Rice's rookie year, but that happened with Rice last year. It was sort of bit, you know, like oh, it's encouraging, it looks good, and then it just kind of went whoo, like in the back half of the season. I'd hope for something similar to that, you know, not, you know, I don't know, what did he end up with, 80 catches or something? I'm not here to tell you I need Coleman to get 80 catches, but more than 40, like 60 would be nice.
I just think he's kind of blocked from that with Cooper here now, because they're not going to ignore Shakir or Kincaid, right? I mean, I don't know what, if they're going to run on first down on every series, like if they're going to be the team they've been, I just don't think there's much more room for Coleman like this year. But I still feel like, for what my concerns were about the player, that I'm okay so far. Right. He's done enough well to make me feel pretty good about.
Yeah, that's right. There's two different conversations, really. It's like what would fulfill you or make you feel like, okay, well, he's made it. You know, numbers wise, that can go over there. He certainly looks like he's going to play in the league and be a dangerous player. Like he's still, that does sort of ride sidecar with he's just learning and still being brought along. But yeah, I'm encouraged by what I've seen from him for sure.
Let's go to Jack here. Hi, Jack.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
I love the show.
Thank you.
So I kind of think the Bills, if they get a chance, should double down on wide receiver. Amari Cooper is good for separation, but it feels to me like another person that can't be covered one-on-one would be good. The problems are a salary cap, so I was thinking maybe Elijah Moore for a fifth or a sixth out of Cleveland. Good separation, not could fit under the cap. Don't know. What do you guys think?
I think they have their Elijah Moore in the form of Khalil Shakir on the team already. And I'm not against this in theory, this idea. I sort of jokingly even the other day said, like, trade for another receiver. I can't imagine them doing it at all. I just cannot, without another injury or something, I can't fathom them doing it. That doesn't mean it's not a decent idea, right? But I think they're already displacing somebody. I hope it's Hollins, because I think Cooper, Shakir, and Coleman are their three best pass catchers. Well, three best receivers. Kincaid matters in that formula, too. I just can't fathom them trading for another guy, especially that guy.
They still have Samuel, too.
Right.
With money. Yeah, I agree. I also don't think it's insane, but I think they made their move. Thanks, Jack. Here is Adam next. Hi, Adam.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
So, Soap, you opened up the show today talking about how Seahawks were your childhood team. They've been my lifelong team. I was born in 79, grew up down in Fredonia, and this is a fun week for me simply because I was there growing up during the Super Bowl years. I hung out with a lot of the players, helped them move in and out of the dorms, things like that. But to this game, it concerns me as a Seahawks fan simply because with the injuries Seahawks have on the defense. And I think Buffalo getting Cooper is really going to help that pass offense open up. And even going cross country, I think Buffalo can take this.
Thanks, Adam. Well, the Bills are favored, so you have a chance, a good chance of being right. Minus three, is it still? 3-47. 25-22. There's your game.
This game's getting in the 30s on both sides.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah.
50s, windy, and wet, by the way. Off and on rain Sunday. Off and on rain. It's always off and on rain in Seattle. Yeah. Like, it's just, I went there for 10 days last summer, and it was like 80 and sunny every day, and I felt like it really didn't do Seattle. It was just too nice out constantly. But this seems like kind of normal for them. Windy, yep. Wet, yep. You know. Coming up.
It is the reputation. I didn't know you were in Seattle for that long.
Well, I was in Seattle for 3 days, 3 to 4 days, then the cruise to Alaska and back. And the whole time, like, yeah. It was maybe 60 in Alaska, which, you know, you don't want that, do you?
No, I think you go to Alaska, you're expecting to have snow. To put on a heavier coat or at least a sweater.
But if you go in July, right. Still got dark at 4 o'clock or whatever, but it was right. Not cold. So, yeah. Fredonia flashback there.
Sure.
You were there. You have some memories.
Oh yeah.
Of Fredonia. I was there a couple times.
I lived down there, twice. Well, once, was it ever in a dorm? I don't think I ever like stayed in a dorm room. I think I always stayed in a hotel off campus or like a motel, off campus. But yeah, like the first time I went down there, I think I only came home on weekends. Like I was there, you know, Monday through Friday for like 3 weeks straight. Camp was longer then, like 2 a days, and it was like 3 weeks long. Literally, like there were like 20 days of practice at training camp, and a lot of it was 2 a days. So yeah, I would just, my show was at night. I'd be there watching practice all day. Yeah, good, really good times. Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Did you help players move in and out of dorms?
No.
Adam?
I never got around to helping players move in and out of dorms, but I did. You know, I had some flagging guys down, walking out of meetings. Had some pretty cool times. There was, you want the Spielman story?
I would love the Spielman story.
The Spielman story was Chris Spielman, like legendary kind of lunatic just really hardwired football. You know, turn the AC on in the room when they're playing in the winter so that he's ready for the cold in Chicago, like psycho. And I
think would sleep naked.
Sure.
On top of the sheets.
Right. With the air conditioning that blasting was the rumor. Cold as it could be if they were playing somewhere cold. Yeah. So he's on the Bills for a couple of years there when I started covering the team and working at WBEN. So I'm there doing my nighttime show, and Chris had been gone from practice for a day for his grandfather's funeral. So he had, and this was known, it was announced by the team. Chris Spielman was not here today, personal business, and then it got out somehow that it was his grandpa's funeral. So I'm doing my nighttime show, just starts at 6 p.m. Maybe it's the 7 o'clock hour, just like this show, long segment at the first segment of the hour. So 7 to like 7:20. And I'm there on campus in like a construction trailer with my setup. And I start, it's like 7:02. And I'm doing the whole spiel. Here's what happened. I practiced today. And I'm the only one in the trailer. I didn't have a producer on site. I had a producer back in Buffalo. And the door of the trailer, the back end, the big door of the trailer is open, like wide, like the size of the trailer door, right? And suddenly on the steps at the edge of the trailer there in the dark is Spielman. He's just shown up, and he's got like, you know, cut off combat shorts on and like a tank top. And he's just staring at me. And I'm by myself, and I'm talking. I don't have enough confidence at this point to like just say, hey, everybody, Chris Spielman is standing here like an insane stalker. Like I would now, I think, if it happened again. But I'm, you know, I'm pretty new at all this. I've never met Chris Spielman. I know who he is. I know what he looks like. He's standing here. And all I can think is, did I say something stupid in the first? I knew he was away. I figure he's probably driving back from Ohio to Fredonia. I didn't really process whether he could have been actually listening to me, but in my head I'm thinking, did I do something? Is he mad at me? Like, what is happening here? But again, I don't have the guts to just introduce him. I'm not sure if he wants to come on, so I don't want to, you know, derail my train of thought. It's hard. I'm just plowing through the segment. I get to the break finally.
He's still standing there?
He's standing there the whole damn time. And I don't know if he's waiting for me to invite him on. Again, I'm just very uneasy. I get to the break. I take my headphones off. I'm like, hey, man, what's up? And he just said, there's no facial expression at all. He's just looking at me. I say, hey, man, what's up? And he goes, what did I miss today? I'm like, there was some practice. You missed practice.
We ran the fumble rooski all day.
Do you want me to tell you how Damian Covington looked filling in for you? Like I ended up having him on the next segment. It was fine. It was nice. But man, that 15 minutes while he was standing there, I was terrified. Like Chris Spielman is here to like wreck me. Like I have no idea what I could have said, but at that I was still so unsure of myself, in the job. Really, I'd only had the job for less than a year at that point.
Should be illegal to have anybody doing a radio show alone.
Yeah, right.
With nobody else there to be like sort of a barrier or to answer questions. Like even back then, that was still happening. That's depressing.
Yeah.
Cool. Tim Booth on the Seahawks at 4. Sal Capaccio will join us later. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, at 803-0550. This is WGR.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Byram up top for the one-timer. That one tips high off the bar, scores! Peyton Krebs on the rebound. It's 1-0 Sabres.
One of the moments of the game for the moments in your life. Go forth to Firth. Moments of the game brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. Joe Marino, right now.
Levis, that pop. Hopkins behind the defender, and he's got it on the run. Third touchdown of the day. Levis to Hopkins for Tennessee.
DeAndre Hopkins and Will Levis had a hot minute last year. This year, not going as well. But he's on the move. DeAndre Hopkins is going to the Kansas City Chiefs. Joining us on the Western Hotline for a bit of instant reaction on this one. And, of course, a breakdown of Bills and Titans and Bills Seahawks is Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast. Joe, what do you got? What do you think? Hopkins to the Chiefs. What do you make of it?
They had to do something. They're losing wide receivers left and right and needed to make a move. And, obviously, you know, one thing that happens in the NFL is that wide receivers get traded all the time. And so it was just a matter of who it was going to be. Was it Hopkins or Cooper Kupp or Deontay Johnson or Christian Kirk? Winds up being Hopkins, who I think gives them some of what they lost in Rashee Rice, is kind of a zone beater, be available on some of those shallow drags and just add that layer back to the offense for Patrick Mahomes. So needed move for Kansas City. And I think kind of the other side of it is kind of glad the Bills made the move when they did to get Amari Cooper, because you feel like that's for a third round pick compared to Hopkins at this point for a five that could be a four. I think you're glad that the Bills got in on that action when they did, so that this isn't the type of receiver that they were going to get instead of Cooper.
Yeah, you think Hopkins has less to offer than Cooper at this point?
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, even he's kind of working through a little knee deal right now, Hopkins is. And, you know, he's got really good hands and body control, but I don't think he's nearly as dynamic as Cooper is in terms of some verticality to his game. And so, you know, I think they'll get what they need out of Hopkins, but I would much rather have Cooper.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. On Cooper, I want to ask you this. Like, you know, yesterday, we spent a lot of time talking about the Bills in respect to the AFC, and Baltimore looks dominant right now. They're really hitting on all cylinders, and they beat up the Bills pretty bad. The real question I want to ask, though, Joe, is how big a change do you think Cooper is to what the Bills do on offense and how teams can defend them, right? For a couple weeks, we're talking about how often the Bills were getting blitzed and Josh Allen's being left out to dry and their receivers are so lacking. Is it so different that we kind of should look at life as before Cooper and after Cooper? Like, a game against Baltimore would not go the same because of the way Baltimore would have to respect the new look Bills. Is it that drastic to you?
That's interesting. I mean, the Bills were severely beaten against Baltimore, and I think the issues on defense were pretty significant in addition to, you know, what the Bills were missing on offense. I think the game would probably be closer. And I always say that the missing ingredient in the Bills' loss to the Ravens, and any time that they get gashed in the run game, is that they just don't score enough points to kind of get the offense out of that rhythm. And I think the game script kind of took on a life of its own. So do I think the game would have been more competitive? Yes. Do I think the Bills were beating Baltimore? I don't think so. I feel like Baltimore had the right stuff that night. But I do think this changes the complexion of the Bills' offense, and I thought you saw pretty quickly how that could happen, even with Amari Cooper only having a couple of practices under his belt. And so I think that will continue to improve as the season moves along. But, I mean, you're talking about a pretty massive upgrade going from Mac Hollins in his role in on the offense, who's a perfectly fine number four or number five receiver. But when he's like your top two, three guy for you, you know, I think you put in Amari Cooper, who's a well-established player in this league in terms of who he is. That just makes you so much better. And I thought you saw it come to life against Tennessee as that game moved along. And you start to think about this offense really kind of having a defined pecking order in terms of your top four being Shakir and Coleman and Cooper and Kincaid. And you start to feel like this is an entirely different feel to this passing game. And it really came to life there in that second half. And I think it's exciting to think about what it can be the rest of the way.
How about the potential of him and Coleman on the field at the same time, what they could do for each other? And knowing, I think I saw that Coleman, none of his targets or at least his catches, Cooper was even on the field for. But what about Joe, what Cooper could do for him, and then also Coleman's game in general? I mean, he puts up over 100 yards, and it felt like it was a breakout game for sure for Coleman.
Yeah, well, I mean, I graded Amari Cooper as a top 10 route runner in the NFL going into the season, actually number seven in the league. And so with him being a route technician like he is, that's only going to benefit a guy like Keon Coleman, who I feel like that's probably the area of his game where it needs the most work. And so being around him on a daily basis, and it seems like Cooper has a lot of just a cerebral guy that's willing to help guys out, I think that'll be a major benefit. But also with them on the field at the same time, I think you have some guys that can present some physical mismatches to defenders. And, you know, I don't know that teams are going to have a ton of options that are going to be great matchup players for this top four that the Bills can now attack a defense with. And so I think it's a major benefit. I think, you know, you've seen defenses kind of key in on maybe a Dalton Kincaid at times for the Bills this year. And I think it just makes it a little bit more difficult to pick your poison, if you will, if you're a defense, because the Bills do have now suddenly a group of skill sets that blend well together that can really expose where you may not have the right matchup defensively. So I think the upgrade is very significant. It certainly benefits Keon Coleman and all the Bills receivers.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us to chat about the matchup against Tennessee and then moving ahead Seattle and on. Joe, defensively, a lot of the numbers on the Bills defense, they're kind of middle of the road, which for a Bills defense is actually a bit down from where they are in previous years. Are the fixes about getting healthy and eliminating chunk plays? Is it time on task, healthy, best players in? Or would you be pushing for Brandon Bean to maybe look to add something somewhere on this defense? You know, he hinted at the idea that they don't have to be done. They could make more moves. Do you feel like they have the horses in-house to get it done?
It's interesting. I think, yeah, maybe metrically there's some areas of the Bills defense that aren't as good. But one thing that is true is they are playing terrific ball in the second half of games, right? If you look at this season, they've given up 96 points in the first half. They've given up 33 total in the second half. Every opponent has been held to seven or less except for Baltimore, who got 14. They've held four opponents to three or less in the second half. So they're figuring it out as games move along, and I think that's an encouraging sign. I think it's about how they're handling things earlier on in games, and I thought, you know, obviously getting out into a 10-0 deficit against Tennessee kind of exposed a talking point that I've had this season, and that the Bills are not doing well to defend short passing game, and teams are coming in and making it a space game and getting yards after catch, and the Bills wound up running a little bit more man coverage against Tennessee that kind of helped with that. So I think they're finding their way, and I think injuries certainly have been significant on that side of the ball, in addition to, you know, Von Miller being suspended for four games amid that. I mean, Bernard Johnson has missed time. Oliver's missed time. So they've certainly had their injuries on the defensive side of the ball. Do I think there's a room for them to get better? Yeah, I think two spots in particular. I think that their interior defensive line depth can be a little bit better. I think Dwayne Carter's been a fine player as a third-round pick, but I don't think they've gotten what they want out of Austin Johnson. And so I think that would potentially be an area to upgrade. And then I think you do look at the safety position, particularly DeMar Hamlin. And I don't think DeMar Hamlin's as bad of a player as a lot of Bills fans make him out to be. I think he's, you know, a serviceable depth player. I don't think he's ideally a starter. And you feel like that can be upgraded, and you feel like the upgrade's right there in Mike Edwards, a player that I'm well familiar with from Kentucky to the Bucks to the Chiefs, really good player. Surprised that he hasn't been able to command a role, but Sean McDermott said repeatedly that he's missed time and getting settled into the defense, whether it was OTAs or camp, and for whatever reason they don't trust him. And so I kind of have some concerns that are they going to bring in an outside option that they're going to suddenly trust? More than DeMar Hamlin, who's the most experienced safety on the team. So, I don't know. That's where I get perked up when I think about, all right, Micah Hyde, you ready to go?
Yeah.
Because I feel like he can help there. So, maybe that's kind of the move. So, I wouldn't put it out, but I think interior defensive line and safety are the most obvious to me where the Bills could find some upgrades.
This week, Seattle, and a team that has some explosive playmakers, DK Metcalf, to keep an eye on him. How do you like the matchup between the Bills and the Seahawks?
Yeah, Seattle's such a weird team. I feel like if you told me that the Seahawks beat any team in the NFL, I'd believe you. If you told me that they lost any team in the NFL, I'd believe you. And I think you kind of saw that. They smoked the Falcons last week in Atlanta with, you know, Falcons kind of having extra rest in that game. And then, you know, they lose at home to the Giants. Did the Giants even have neighbors for that game? I mean, it was just really kind of strange. And so Seattle's super talented. I mean, they have prototypes all over the field. I mean, really, really upper echelon talent. It's just a matter of how it comes together for them. They have a really young coaching staff, not just because Mike McDaniel's in his first season, but not a ton of experience in the NFL. And Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator, pretty much fresh out of college with basically no NFL experience. And so, you know, they have a lot of coming together, and I think that's what's leading to their wide range of results. But they're a talented group that's going to present a good challenge for the Bills. And certainly from a matchup perspective, I don't think you look at it and feel like, oh, yeah, this is a very obvious advantage that the Bills have over Seattle. It's going to come down to probably execution, coaching, and how the Bills can handle, you know, going to the Pacific Northwest and playing in a hostile environment.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. All right, Joe, thanks for the time. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys, thank you.
You can find the Locked On Bills podcast anywhere you get your podcast, subscribe to that, and also the Locked On NFL Scouting podcast to, you know, get Joe and Kyle Krabs their thoughts on the league. They do a great job with it. So subscribe to Locked On Bills. DeAndre Hopkins to the Chiefs. Still finalizing details from what I'm reading. One of the conditions might be if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, it goes from a fifth to a fourth.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of condition you put in as the Chiefs, and the other team has to think like, well, that's very possible.
Yeah. And so the Chiefs think, well, what do we care if we do it again? Fifth to a fourth.
It is interesting how much they are going for, if I may use this phrase, immortality, three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a pull is there to gun for that third in a row? What would they give up to make sure they can get the job done? Like, would they trade a first and a second? Would they adopt the Rams mantra of, you know, bleep them picks? Because we're not going for one, we're going for a third. 803-0550 on Hopkins, on Bill Seahawks, on Saber Stars, if you want that. 803-0550 on WGR.
All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to be joined in studio now by Bills center Connor McGovern. Player interview appearances on One Bills Live are presented by Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons, the official coffee of the Buffalo Bills, fresh off the practice field. Thanks for making some time for us, Connor, first and foremost. O-line is killing it, man. Guys are killing it lately. I'm going to go back to week six because you want to talk about a tone setter. Like, that first series was maybe as dominant as I have seen you guys maybe since the Cowboys game last year. What the hell got into you guys?
Yeah, well, you know, Deion always shows that he does not want the Jets at all.
We're very familiar with Deion's disdain for the Jets, yes.
Uh, But we want to make a point that week. Like, we want to come out and run the ball. We started slow the 2 weeks before that, especially at first down, getting behind the chains. And we want to stay ahead in the green. And I think we did that the first drive.
Yeah, yeah, ran no eight kidding. Out of nine plays. Yeah.
Nine plays.
And then the one
runs.
Pass we did throw, Dalton catches and he runs someone over. So then that set the tone.
Yeah, that was it was impressive. And when you come off the field, you score the touchdown, you come off the field, I mean, you sit down on that bench and it's like, okay,
you feel good.
You can't wait to get back out there,
exactly.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Give us an idea about where you're sitting at this point. You bounce back from the two games on the road trip with a win, and then you come back and get another win. So you're sitting right where you want to be. The rest of the division's kind of struggling at the moment. So what's your mindset going into a game, a team you don't know very well, you don't play very often, and they're leading the league in passing. So yeah. What are the thoughts going in?
Thoughts going in, it's going to be a hostile environment. We know that. They have a good defense, great offense also. So we know it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be like one of those games that you're getting ready for the playoffs only, going to an extreme hostile environment. So we're just getting ourselves ready for that and just excited to take on this challenge.
I don't know if you saw this because you were out of practice. You're nowhere near your phone. But in the last 2 hours, the Seahawks traded for Ernest Jones, the linebacker from the Titans, who you guys just played last week. I mean, the guy you're pointing at is the Mike.
Yeah.
You're going to be pointing at for the second straight week, potentially.
Yeah, we don't know if he's going to slide around yet because
Carl
Dotson is their Mike, technically. So we don't know if there's going to be a little shifting around. But
yeah.
He has a little knowledge of what we did
last week. So what is that cat and mouse game like? Because he obviously has a good feel for your personnel because he just played against you, but it's the same thing for him, and you guys obviously know
same,
Tyrell.
Similar defense. They both come from the
Baltimore
same
system kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. So you know Tyrell. You know Ernest from last week. So how does that cat and mouse game kind of unfold? Because you kind of both know each
other. I think it's one of those things
other.
You don't think about too much. Like if you try to focus like, oh, he played like this last week. We don't know if he's going to have the same schemes, same reads this week. Or you don't know if he's going to still be the Mike or how they're going to switch things around. So I just think we just take a step back, how we doing, and just look at it as fundamentally the same and just try to run what we want to get done this week.
Gotcha.
Yeah, when you come out with a team like this, you run the ball so well, they're susceptible to it, but they throw they throw it. You kind of got to stay kind of – what is the thought process about if they're going to score, you know, we got to keep up with them on the scoreboard. Where's the balance there between –
I think it comes down to we got to establish a run game and control the clock. We play on our terms. Like you saw it when we've controlled the games this year. Like we have the ball the majority of the time. Like the games are – we lost. We didn't control the time of possession. I think that will be a big factor in this week. If first down, we're getting the 6-7 yards if we need to, and then just stay ahead of it and just keep chunking them. And just keep them off the field as much as we can and give our defense breaks.
I remember in your press conference in week two after the first game, the win over Arizona, you were talking about how you felt the communication wasn't at a level where you wanted it to be in that week one game. How has it improved since then? I mean, every time you're out, naturally you should get better at all of those operational things. So how do you feel it's grown since week one when it wasn't at a level that you wanted it to be?
Yeah, I think it's only gotten better since then. Obviously, we had the couple tough road games in Baltimore. I feel like it dipped back down the communication. We weren't used to full that in hostile environment. Saw in Houston next week, it got better. Then we were on the Jets. Like, it felt we were just comfortable at home again. Noise wasn't affecting us at all. So I just feel like each week we're just taking that step more and more, and then Josh is just more comfortable back there and letting us control what we need to.
So you get out, and I know this is a completely different side of the spectrum offensively for you, but you get Amari Cooper in the building.
Yeah.
And think, okay, and you kind of think, I hope he can help, you know. And then he goes out and has a game like he did, and Keon Coleman has the game he did, and you guys are inside, you know, protecting Josh. What's the vibe like in this offensive move? Because it feels like you're 5-2, and you haven't really captured everything can be at all.
Like, you see our losses. Yeah, it was a blowout loss to the Ravens, but a lot of this stuff came down. It was our errors that, like, we blew our momentum, just stuff like that, miscommunications. And then the following week, they fell on us. Like, it was just a lot of things we did wrong. Like, should have been more in those games.
Yeah.
And I feel like adding Cooper just allows other guys to get open too. Like, he's demanding, like, something. You got to put two guys on him and allows other guys to get open. Allow us to start getting the run game going in the second half like we did. Just opens up more things with this offense.
Little college football talk here. I can't remember a time when we've seen Penn State above Ohio State in the rankings, but that is the case right now. Penn State is 3.
Yeah. 2017 was the last time, I think.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
So Penn State number 3,
yep.
Ohio State number 4, and you guys got Wisconsin this week,
Wisconsin.
I want to say.
Yeah.
How juiced are people getting down there in Happy Valley? I'm sure
I think it's a good time, but
keep an eye on it.
Yeah, one of those games that's always hard to play at Camp Randall and all that, so that'll be a challenge this week. And then hopefully they're just not looking forward to next week already.
Yeah.
You and I got something in common you may not know about. We were both at the Sabres game last night.
Really?
Yeah.
I was not there.
You weren't there?
No.
One of your fellow offensive linemen were there. You didn't show up with Alec Anderson?
I did not, no.
Did you see what he did? Have you seen it?
I did see the video.
Here's your guy.
Banging
the drum. And which is kind of cool. I like the red and black sweater. That's always appropriate for a guy who, you know, may not remember the black and red Sabres.
Who is that? Vandy? Vandy
and Tommy Doyle back
there. Yeah, here they go.
Of course, the shirt always comes off.
Yeah,
Alex, is that his thing?
That's his thing. And then, he's going to chug
now,
beer.
Is he one of those guys that can open his throat?
Yes. That's slow for him right there. It's very impressive when watch him having chugging
competition. No wonder he's a sixth offensive lineman, man.
Yeah, and we've seen this too. Like, every time there's a little dust up on the field or a little extracurricular.
I guess he's always right there.
He's always in the middle of it. What is it about? Because he's a different person off the field. Like, he's kind of a happy
guy. When
he
comes on the field, we call him an angry shark. And all that. He's
angry shark.
Yeah, he's just switching out there, and then just something in him. Like,
a switch flips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've made the point that, you know, you want a bunch of great – nobody likes to work with donkeys, right? You want a bunch of great dudes that you love and respect. Mm-hmm. And you got – but you also need guys –
yeah, you need some nastiness out there.
That if there's a fight, they're not only in the fight, they want to be in the middle of the fight.
Yeah, and they're not going to question. They're strapping their helmet
on.
They're jumping in there. Yeah.
You just hope they're on time on Sunday. You need like – all right, so what's the over-under of how many guys you can stand on your team who are that guy? One or two on each side of the ball?
Yeah, one or two. We have a couple on offense and a couple on defense. And during camp, that gets a little testy on it, but you're great to have it. Like, you know, in camp, you're guaranteed a couple breaks during practice when they're fighting, and then kind of just slide out the back and let them keep going.
Are you like a little jealous you can't really be that guy because you got to be the cerebral kind of ringleader of the line?
I'm fine. I had my times when I was younger getting into fights on it, but you learn to conserve your energy. You don't need to always do that. And plus, on game day, you don't want to get fined.
All right, time now for this week's Timbits Timeout, presented by, of course, Tim Hortons, where we solicit the fans to ask Bills players a unique question. This one comes from Steven, who asks, what is your favorite thing about Josh Allen?
Okay, on or off the field?
Either one. Well, give us one for each, I guess.
Yeah, I'd say on the field, just you never know. Like, at any point, he could just make a play. Like, you saw Pittsburgh last year when he pulls off that long run for the touchdown. Yep. Just able to extend plays. You saw in the Houston game when he rolls out of the pocket and just throws it down the field to set us up for the touchdown. You saw the one last week, 2 weeks ago with Ray Davis down the field. Just stuff like that. Like, he just has that ability just to extend plays and just make something magical happen. Then I'll just say off the field, just how much of like a great guy he is, just like a golden retriever as a person.
That is hilarious. Yeah. That's what Steve says
just
all the time.
Just a great guy all around. Just loves hanging out with everyone. Just loves to have a good time.
Yeah, that's what Steve calls him. He's like a golden retriever running around out there. All right, that's a good answer. Connor, thanks for the time.
Of course, thank you.
Good
for
luck
having
this weekend.
Thank you.
Stay healthy, and good luck with the silent count up there at Lumen.
Thank you.
We know you're going to be using it. That's Connor McGovern, Bill Center, joining us. We transition now to the post-practice podium where Josh Allen is addressing the media.
What do you make of the Seattle defense and kind of what they've been able to do so far this season and where you guys can maybe find some opportunities?
Yeah, a couple really good corners. Obviously, familiar face in T-Dot. He's playing really good football. I think their D-line is playing very, very solid defense as well. Tough team to run against. You know, they've been a high-effort group. They've been making some plays, so we're going to have our hands full.
Do you see any similarities with their coach being from Baltimore? You know, maybe on third downs, funky at all.
The last couple teams we've played run very similar systems, kind of from the same tree. Obviously, they've got their own nuances and different, game plans, obviously, throughout the weeks. But in terms of, like, a base game plan, it's very similar. So, again, no easy task. It's a tough defense, and that's why you see a lot of them out there, this type of defense that we're playing. So, again, we got to have a good week of practice and got to go out there and execute on Sunday.
Just having Amari now, how much more time are you getting with him? What's it like getting him?
Yeah, again, just trying to get as much time as possible with him, talking about little nuances in our game plan, things that I like to see and vice versa. So trying to get on the same page. But again, his professionalism is through the roof. He's always working on his craft. He's easy to talk to about what he likes, and you know, I'm excited to see what we can do.
Not the offenses that you have involved this year, but you guys have been efficient. How important has that been, the success of the offense, and how important is that going on the road?
It's very important. Getting James going, getting Ray going. Obviously, Ty's been able to step in on third down and first and second down every once in a while. But I think our guys are running it well. Our lines open up the holes well for him as well. And you know, it's vital for our offense. You know, in terms of being able to move guys, create running lanes. Our play action game, it's very, very much predicated on how well we can run the ball. And again, I think you said that we've been efficient in it, and we got to keep doing it.
What's it been like getting to know Ray this season?
It's awesome. He's an old soul, I'll tell you that. He knows his football. He's been around a lot. Obviously, in college, went to three different schools, which is kind of the norm now. But, you know, he's a team first guy that just wants to do whatever's asked of him, and he runs the ball extremely hard. He's very good in a duo and a inside zone scheme. He's a one-cut guy, kind of lower to the ground. He packs a punch, but he's very decisive in his running, and that's what I think makes him really good for this team.
Josh, go ahead and knock on the 7 games in offense, which is what you think. Why do you think they're so much more efficient in that way?
Well, I think the defenses, like I said, whether it was last week or 2 weeks ago, they've dropped a couple, which helps. But just making better decisions, understanding the game plan, knowing where my answers are, and utilizing my legs when I need to. But again, just better decision making. I think that comes with the coaching and Joe and RC and the quarterback room that we have. Just talking to those guys, relying on the information that they're giving me, and just going out there and the mindset of just trying to play smart and sound football and taking opportunities and shots when they're there.
I know there's a bunch of factors in play for that, to follow up on Sal's question, but how much pride do you take in cutting in the back when that's really been, you know, we've asked about in the past and always been something on your mind. So how much pride are you able to take in? How it's been going so far?
A lot of pride. I think that's one of the things I wanted to clean up really last couple of years, and to now go out there and do it. It's easier said than done, and again, it takes some luck to get there. You're going to have balls that shouldn't be intercepted that are intercepted, and you're going to have balls that probably should be intercepted that aren't. So, again, I'm just trying to take it one play at a time, make the right decision, and get it to our guys.
Kind of self-deprecating there a little bit when you say that the defense has dropped some, but it really hasn't been that many. When you review film, do you grade yourself on a throw that, you know, maybe it was dropped? Like, to your point there about the defense should have intercepted it, how do you view those types of plays?
Yeah, I mean, bad decisions, a couple of them were late in game desperation plays, but you know, there's certain times where that's going to be necessary. You're going to have to take some risks. You're going to have to try to push the ball downfield and do whatever you can to help your team. So again, I'm not sitting back there not trying to throw interceptions, and I think that's, again, when you try not to, that's when they typically happen. You just got to go out there and play football, trust your eyes, trust your feet, trust your arm, and that's what we're doing right now.
Josh, with Seattle, I mean, how much of a point of emphasis this week is getting off to a fast start and taking the past couple games where the offense hasn't gotten off to that fast start?
Yeah, I mean, I think really in all but maybe one or two games, we really haven't clicked early on, and it's taken us a couple drives to fill out what the defense is doing and getting into a rhythm. So getting off to a fast start is our utmost important thing going forward, and it starts with a good practice, good week of practice, and then going out there and executing a game plan. But, you know, it feels like when we go back and watch the film, it's a lot of what we're doing. It's a lot of self-inflicted stuff. It's misreads. It's pre-snap penalties. It's whatever the case may be. But, you know, we really feel like we're hurting ourselves, not so much what the teams that we're playing against are doing. So that's something we're looking to clean up. And, you know, we got more opportunities for that. And Sunday's the first one.
How does the Seattle defense create so much pressure?
Yeah, I think they bring it from different areas. They give you different looks. I think they've got really good checks in there, especially in their empty calls, where you know, it's kind of simulated pressures where you're not really hot. You've got enough guys to to block, but they're bringing them from the other side that you're going to. So, again, just making sure that we're keen on talking and communication and making sure we're protecting ourselves, and then just, again, trying to throw it to our guys and get the ball in their hands moving and let them go get some rack.
Go back to last.
Yeah, I think it's offensive scheme, getting them in positions where they can catch and run. Part of it's, again, ball placement, making sure that they can catch the ball in front of them while they're moving, not slowing down. And then part of it is, you know, that being who they are, being able to make guys miss, being able to stay on their feet. You talk about, you know, Khalil, some of the stuff that we've been able to do with him, again, is just kind of what he does. He's so, his ability to bounce off tacklers and stay low to the ground, and obviously Keon's a bigger body, but he can still move and, yeah, create some racks. So that's very, very promising to see.
All right, that's Bills quarterback Josh Allen addressing the media after Wednesday's practice today. We'll take a break here and back with one final segment on a Wednesday edition of One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I don't love junior mints. I just don't hate them. I don't understand why they are treated like second-class candy.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Oh, there's a, you there's don't a understand why a candy that is basically toothpaste wrapped up in stale chocolate is treated like a second-class candy. All right, I get it. It's a good, valid question.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is there a time to change? You know, the three teams I've drafted this year, second-class candy is pretty good.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I don't mean this to sound suspicious, but I'm sitting here since the update pondering how one suffers a sprained thumb in a car accident. I can think of a lot of worse possible injuries from a car accident. I mean, again,
sure, of course, yeah. I
it's
think
possible,
I,
of
I
course.
Would,
but
I would guess holding the steering wheel. And, you know, just the force of the collision, just you wrenched your hand. And thankfully, maybe that's the only injury. Because what I had read originally about that accident yesterday was that no one in the family needed medical assistance. I guess maybe a broken thumb doesn't require, like, a trip in an ambulance.
Sprained thumb, even.
Sprained thumb, right.
So you're fine.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think twice about it.
No.
It's good. No, that's fine. I don't need to. I just, I'm trying to figure, like, how would you do it? You said it.
Yeah, you're holding on to the wheel. Right. Yeah,
I don't hold on to the wheel. That's the thing. I can't imagine holding on to the wheel.
Let's introduce our guest and find out how he liked that car crash noise I just simulated. Oh, my God.
Well,
I'm going to punch
out. Hopefully he's still with us. Our guest is Tim Booth from the Seattle Times. Talk Bills Seahawks here with us. Tim, thank you. Mike and Chris here. Appreciate you being on.
That was a great car accident noise. I don't have any criticism of it whatsoever. I thought it was excellent.
Thank you. I feel very embarrassed.
Shouldn't any self-respecting radio station already have like 10 to 20 car crash noises in the can, though? You shouldn't need to make your own. I mean, come on.
You would think it would be an instant drop that you could just hit a button and have something. But hey, if you have to ad lib on the fly, that was pretty good.
Then you do it. It's, you know, it's been, we've been here a long time, Tim, Bulldog and I, and for most of our time, the Bills missed the playoffs every year, 17 years without, and then Sean McDermott, then Josh Allen, and it's been long enough now where it feels like the drought was just so long ago, but it's only as long ago as to say this, the Bills have not been to Seattle since McDermott and Josh Allen, so that, of course, runs out on Sunday. I'm excited about this matchup, are you?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a good, I think it's a good test for both teams, and especially for the Seahawks, because, you know, they're still in this infancy phase of Mike McDonald taking over and implementing his style and his fingerprints on this franchise that obviously for so long was defined by Pete Carroll, and they're just kind of getting through their first bout of adversity and having a three-game losing streak and then snapping that by playing pretty dang well last week in Atlanta, I think sets up a kind of a fascinating matchup between two teams that I think at the end of the day are probably going to be looked at as being pretty good league-wide by the end of the season.
That's, you know, I hadn't really thought about that facet of this. I mean, I know there's a new coach there, and I know where he came from and all that, but the idea that they had one guy in charge for so long, I feel like that makes it harder for the new guy, right? I mean, he's so entrenched and established that guys would be just so used to that. Not that everyone would have been there under Pete Carroll. There's surely some new guys there, but it's quite a shadow to walk into.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. And it's something where I don't think Mike has gone out of his way to be markedly different and do things in a way that was totally the opposite of how Pete did. But there are things where they are just completely different people. Obviously, age-wise, they're at either end of the coaching spectrum. I mean, Seattle went from the oldest coach in the league to the youngest coach in the league. But their personalities are drastically different, too. Pete would regale you with stories about, you know, Bud Grant and experiences from 30 and 40 years ago, and he could just go on and on and on and fill up a notebook in 30 minutes of conversations about his history within the game. And Mike is not that way. Mike is a very straightforward, no-nonsense, hey, you're going to ask me a question, you're going to get an answer. Hey, I'm going to ask this of you, I expect you to do this, is sort of the way he directs and talks to his players. So, it is quite the challenge to walk into a place that has been known for so long in being a certain way and having a certain sort of personality and vibe and atmosphere around it. But I think, you know, for the most part, Mike's done a really good job of coming in and sort of making it his own in a short period of time. And then having some success early on obviously feeds into that. It gives guys the belief and the confidence that, hey, maybe these guys know what they're talking about, and we should, you know, believe in the systems that they're putting in and what they're trying to do with us, even though it's so new from things that have been done that way in the past.
Listening to you, Tim, on Carroll is taking me back to we had weekly conversations for many years with the late John Clayton, and Clayton would talk about this sometimes too, just like being around the team, and he lived. Didn't he walk to the facility? Right. He would say, and
yes, he did. Yes, yeah, he did.
Carroll's first NFL job with the Bills in 1984, 40 years ago. He's listed as an advisor. Tim, is he still around? Like, do you still see him there?
No. No, okay. I mean, and Pete hasn't done much. He hasn't done much media since he left. He's done a couple of podcasts, a couple of radio appearances, and he in those he has said that he has kind of purposely wanted to stay away to let Mike sort of come in and do things on his own and not be not be any sort of shadow that's lingering over Mike or the franchise. And yeah, the advisory role, that was kind of a nice little title they gave as they kind of, you know, shoved him out the door and said, thank you for your 14 years, but we're ready to go in a different direction. It was, you know, it's more of an honorary kind of thing than any sort of active role that he's taking. Oddly enough, though, a couple of weeks ago, we had an NBA exhibition game here between the Clippers and the Portland Trail Blazers, and funny enough, at halftime there was a moment where Pete was there and he was sitting courtside, and all of a sudden here comes Mike McDonald walking up to him, and Seahawks general manager John Schneider walking up, and they were talking for, you know, 5 or 6 minutes during halftime of that game. That's really kind of the first interaction, at least publicly, we've seen between them since Pete got let go. So he's still around in the area. His son is the offensive coordinator now at the University of Washington, and he's kind of made a point of staying in the Seattle area, but we don't see Pete out of practice or around the facility at all.
I didn't know that. His son is the offensive coordinator at Washington, and the current new Seahawks offensive coordinator was in that job last year.
Correct. Yes, and so it's an interesting little mix of coaches that they have here in Seattle right now.
How is it going on the field? Like, the we know McDonald got the gig off of the success he had on the defensive side of the ball with the Baltimore Ravens. How it feels like from a distance here, like that's been maybe the acclimation has been slow. How would you describe it?
The acclimation has definitely been slow on when it comes to the run defense. They've really struggled stopping the run. I think that's ultimately what helped lead to the trade today to get Ernest Jones from Tennessee, because they've seen him in previous years with the Rams. He fits a little bit more the profile of a run stopping linebacker that, you know, Jerome Baker. They brought in from Miami as a free agent, and he was nagged by a hamstring injury, and it just never seemed like he got fully up to speed. He looked slow out on the field. And then Tyrell Dodson, has been the other linebacker, and Tyrell's not the biggest guy in the world, and it felt like teams were running over them through the first five, six games of the season. The run defense got better last week against Atlanta. It was kind of a tale of two halves in that game. Bijan Robinson and the Falcons ran for 116 yards in the first half. I think they had only about 34 in the second half on the ground. So there were some changes that were made that led to better success at stopping the run. But these guys have been run over by San Francisco. They got run over by the Giants. They got run over by the Patriots earlier in the year. They could have been run over by the Lions if not for Jared Goff having a perfect day passing. So the defense is still very much a work in progress, and it's been the run defense that has been the biggest issue so far for them. The pass defense has been okay. They're dealing with a lot of injuries in the secondary, some key injuries that they're hoping to get some guys back this week against the Bills, but the run defense has been the thing that stood out as being the biggest struggle so far.
Tim Booth is our guest from the Seattle Times. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR. Well, the Bills are kind of a running team now, so we'll see what that matchup looks like on Sunday. It's always been kind of weird to me since they made this transition around Thanksgiving last year, a little before, but it's kind of what they want to do. Their neutral situation, pass rates, doesn't that roll off the tongue, are much lower than they used to be. I don't know. Like one thing that's happened here with the Amari Cooper acquisition last week was the Bills were facing man-to-man defenses, and which, like, usually Allen eats up. He can run on that, eat more easily. And this year, teams were just not afraid to do that. So they're in a little bit of a transition, too, because of Cooper. We'll see if they want to run it, for starters, at least, on Sunday.
Yeah, it'll be – I think a big key for that will be how healthy Seattle is in the secondary. Reek Wolin and Trey Brown, their two starters at cornerback, both missed last week's game against the Falcons. So they were rolling out there a rookie in Nehemiah Pritchett and sort of a journeyman practice squad guy in Josh Jobe as two of their starting cornerbacks to begin the game. And all in all, they did okay, but they're not Reek Wolin and they're not Trey Brown. And it meant that Devin Witherspoon, sort of their best player in the secondary, had to do some things that normally they like to use him in a lot of different ways. They like to put him down in the box. They like to bring him on blitzes and pressures. And he just couldn't quite do that last week because he had to be responsible for more coverage-related things. And so if those two guys, if Wolin and Brown are healthy enough to play on Sunday, and that's not an indication we have yet, then I think that allows Seattle to be a little bit more creative in its coverages and what it wants to do defensively to try and fluster Josh in that offense.
How about up front? Leonard Williams is a name, certainly Byron Murphy's a name fans might remember from the draft. Even Jaron Reed is a player I think fans are probably somewhat familiar with, just a name that's been around. Who do the Bills have to really worry about up front, or is it more blitzing off the edge like you just indicated with the cornerback?
Well, Seattle would love to. I mean, every team would love to get pressure with 4 and 5 and not have to expose the secondary. But their success this year has been when those guys have been healthy and been disruptive, getting pressure from the interior, and then allowing guys like Boye Mafe and Derek Hall to pressure off the edge. And last week the turning point in the game was against the Falcons was Mafe with a strip sack fumble on Kirk Cousins and Hall picking it up and running it back for a touchdown. It was the kind of it was just the kind of play that they haven't gotten this year very often from this defense. Up until last week, they had forced four total turnovers in the first six games, and they got three in the fourth quarter alone against the Falcons. But when it comes to the interior of that defense, you know, Leonard Williams is probably the best all-around player. Byron Murphy had been out with a hamstring injury, and he came back last week, and it was noticeable that he was back in there. He's got that unique combo of speed for a guy that is his size, but doesn't give up, you know, any power or strength in having that kind of quickness and agility for being a defensive tackle. So that's, having him back was a really big deal last week against the Falcons, and they need him to stay healthy, because the part of the issues with the, not only with the run defense, but some of their pressure rates when he was out, was because they just weren't getting much push from the interior of that defensive line. So that combo, that threesome that you mentioned up front, if they can have some success creating, you know, plugging up the run game, but then also pushing the pocket, it allows those guys off the edge to come in and be as impactful as they were last week against the Falcons.
With Tim Booth of the Seattle Times, at By Tim Booth on Twitter, you mentioned Jaron Reed, Bulldog. I remember him for that draft, because the Bills traded up in that second round for Reggie Ragland, which I hated. And like, Reed was the guy who maybe went in their spot, or was in another trade. Like, he seemed like a really exciting, you know, more exciting idea, and you wouldn't have to trade up this many years later, still going. And another player, apologies for this lengthy segue here, Tim, but that we talked about at the time when he was drafted was Geno Smith many years ago. And mm-hmm. I would like to hear your sort of, you know, your story on when, if you have, I think you probably have, bought in to the idea that Geno Smith was, you know, actually good. The pass he throws to Metcalf last week, 30 or so yards for that touchdown, it's just as good a pass as you'll see in the NFL.
Yeah, he's, I think we've seen him. I think the thing that stands out about Geno is during his three seasons now as a starter here, he has not played behind a really good offensive line in any of those three seasons. And he has just a really keen awareness of pocket presence, how to move within the pocket, how to feel pressure but not get freaked out by the pressure that we see some quarterbacks do sometimes, where they just, you know, sort of lose their mind because they feel the push of the defensive front coming at them, or they feel the pocket collapsing. Like, he's just really, he gets emotional within the game because he's very much a very competitive person. But when he's in those situations, he's incredibly poised, and it leads to situations like that throw that you're mentioning against the Falcons last week, where the defensive tackles of the Falcons are pushing that offensive line back into Geno's face, but he knew he had the route, he knew he had the look that they wanted in that situation. He stayed in and delivered a really, really remarkable pass. And that's the thing with Geno is he's cut down on the mistakes that always plagued him early in his career, the mistakes that really stood out. And because he's cut down on those mistakes, the focus now has gone to, he's an incredibly accurate passer. And I think that's one thing that we heard from coaches during training camp. It's not the kind of thing that they say in the press conference, but you know, pull someone off to the side and chat with them. And one of the things that stood out was, when they would watch Geno on tape during the off season as they're getting ready to implement this new offense and this new coaching staff, was, yeah, he looks on tape like he's a pretty good thrower of the football. And then they got out there for off season workouts, and they got out there for training camp, and some of those coaches were like, this guy's an elite passer. Like, he's an elite thrower of the football. Like, he could put the ball into windows that, if he has the time and the opportunity to do so, he's going to throw an incredibly accurate pass that some quarterbacks just can't do. And the thing that stood out, I think, the most was watching Geno and watching Sam Howell every day during training camp just sort of reinforce that. And that's not necessarily a knock on Sam, because, you know, you saw last year with Washington how dynamic he could be. Obviously, he had the interception issues, but he put up some pretty big games last year, but watching him throw and then watching Geno throw, it was a massive difference in training camp this year. So that's a very long-winded way of saying, you know, I kind of bought into Geno early in the season a couple of years ago when he became the full-time starter, because you saw some of those throws and some of that poise in the pocket, and it's just kind of built upon itself as he's gotten more and more turns and more starts over these last two seasons.
Tim, we know already that DK Metcalf will not practice today. Does he have any shot to play here, or is the coach maybe just being a little cute / secretive, whatever, competitive advantage type stuff?
It's a good question. It sounds like he's not practicing today. It sounds like he's not going to practice tomorrow. DK went through this, I think it was last season or it was the season before, where he had a little bit of a knee issue and he didn't practice on Wednesday or Thursday. He did a walkthrough on Friday and then he played on Sunday. And if I remember right, it was against the Giants that he went through that. So until we get to Friday, I don't think we're fully going to know if he's going to be out there or not. If he takes part in the walkthrough on Friday, then I think there's a decent chance that he will play on Sunday. Seattle also has its bye coming up in 2 weeks, so I don't know if it's, and they have a divisional game against the Rams next week. So while the Bills are a much more difficult opponent overall to play, the divisional game against the Rams and having the bye on the horizon, it might mean that it makes the most sense to have him sit out this week and then hope to get him back next week and then give him a couple of weeks off before he has to play again. But I think we'll know more about DK status once we get to Friday.
Very good. Well, thank you, Tim. Learned a lot. Interesting conversation. And we wish you well. Thanks for your time. Love your city, by the way.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on. And it's one of those lovely days in Seattle right now where I can't decide if it's going to just dump rain for the next 6 hours or if it's going to be sunny. So, it's that time of year here.
Like I've said earlier today, talking about this game, I was there last summer, and it was 80 and sunny every day for like a week, and I just didn't feel like I got the whole experience.
Well, Seattle between July 5th and about September 25th might be the best city in the entire country, because that's usually what it's like. We put up with all the gray and all the rain to have about 10 weeks of just beautiful weather in the summer, but it's a lot to put up with to have those 10 weeks.
I think maybe we can relate a little bit around here. Very good,
yeah,
Tim.
Exactly.
Thanks again. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Tim Booth of the Seattle Times. 803-0550 for your calls. DeAndre Hopkins traded to Kansas City. Let's compare that trade with what the Bills did, or even the Jets. Heavy action right now in the AFC at wide receiver. Maybe it's not over. I wonder what the next move could be. Callers still coming in with ideas almost every day of the next guy. I mean, I'm not saying, we talked about it before, maybe that's right to do. We don't think, you and I don't think it's realistic, but fans don't want it. They want the train to keep rolling.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely think it's unrealistic. But also, you know, not necessarily an unreasonable idea. I don't think they are going to do anything. And really, let me do better than that. I don't think I need them to do anything. They went and got Cooper, and I like Shakir, and Coleman is looking nice. And let's get the ball to Kincaid. Like, I think I'm good.
Lines are open for you. Sal Capaccio at 5 today. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog, WGR.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. What,
you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.